Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 33 degrees and overcast. Today's Monday, January 30th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A section of Halibut Point Road near downtown Sitka remains closed this morning. Crews are continuing to repair the aftermath of a water valve that burst a week ago. As KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the work means continued detours for motorists.
It's been a snowy few days out here along Halibut Point Road between Marine and Erler Streets. That's where traffic has been diverted from HPR, which is Sitka's main artery into town from the north. A crew near Marine Street is smoothing concrete on a square patch of road, and just down the hill a little ways, near the foot of New Archangel Street, two pieces of heavy equipment are moving giant chips of asphalt from a tremendous gash in the road.
You know, every morning you've got snow to get out of the ditch and stuff before you can backfill. You've got snow just to remove from the job site so you can move around.
Mark Buggins is environmental superintendent for the city's public works department. He oversees drinking water and wastewater. It was a drinking water line that had the problem. An 8-inch valve blew apart on Monday evening. The culprits were steel alloy bolts that had corroded and weakened. This all happened after a period of cold weather and the resulting thaw, but Buggins says it was not the cold weather that caused the accident. Still, it sure made it worse. Normally, something like this would blow water straight up through the concrete, resulting in a somewhat isolated hole.
But with the road all frozen, 30 inches or so, it hit the bottom of that frozen road and then went downhill and went both directions. So we've had to, after we fixed our valve, we've had to then chase where the water flowed under the road and made voids and then refill that and essentially just rebuild the road.
Buggins says crews from the city's public works department and from Johnson Concrete have been working 12 to 13 hour days for the last week to make the repairs. And typically there are two or three leaks in a year in Sitka, but Buggins says he's never seen anything like this. Still, he adds that it could have been worse.
It worked out well, in a sense, because it went right, most of it went right over into the lake, you know, and didn't wash a house away or something, because that was a tremendous amount of water in a very short time.
How much water?
It was about 400,000 gallons in an hour.
About 7 houses in the surrounding neighborhood were without water for a day and were under a boil water notice until tests came back showing the water was safe. City crews have been busy this winter. A water main burst on Smith Street a couple weeks ago, and there was another leak behind Sitka Community Hospital that crews had to address in a hurry. In fact, they were wrapping up work on those repairs when this accident happened. So let's go back for a minute to the culprit behind the HPR closure. Buggins says it was the bolts on the valve housing that corroded, which led the housing to burst. The bolts were made in the 1990s out of a steel alloy, and as it turns out, they've been causing problems industry-wide.
The valve that's our standard is stainless steel bolts, and all the fittings on it are stainless steel or the epoxy coating.
And the problem bolts you said are made of what?
They're a steel, an alloy of steel.
Buggins says Sitka's water system has more bolts, just like the ones that failed, and that his team is going to work to find out where they are. That doesn't mean, however, that they'll all need to be replaced. Buggins says the bolt's risk of failure is determined by the soil around it, as well as stray electric current. For now, though, crews are focused on fixing Halibut Point Road. Once they pour concrete, it will need about 3 days to set before the road can be reopened to traffic. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The commercial halibut catch will drop by just over 18% coast-wide this year. The International Pacific Halibut Commission voted on the limits at the end of its annual meeting Friday morning. Southeast is the only area in Alaska that will actually see a small increase after several years of steep reductions. The commission also endorsed a proposal that will ease the halibut size restriction for the charter fleet in Southeast. Matt Lichtenstein has more.
The commission approved a catch totaling just over 33.5 million pounds for Alaska, Canada, and the Pacific Northwest. That's down roughly 18% from last year, though as usual the change varies from area to area. Overall, the commission's scientists continue to see a drop in the abundance of fish big enough to harvest, known as the exploitable biomass, or e-biomass. As they revise their research with new data each year, they're also finding they've overestimated the stocks in recent years. The commission and its staff are working to develop new management policies to address the problems in the future. This year's cut results partly from a change in the scientific model they use to assess stocks. U.S. Commissioner Ralph Hoard spoke in support of the staff recommendations.
We have a professional staff that has done the science on halibut since 1924, and I think we should follow their lead. While I'm going to push for new systems in the future to be peer-reviewed, with the serious decline in e-bio over the last few years, I don't think we have the luxury to wait under the current circumstances. I am therefore supporting our scientists, and this rationale goes for all the motions I'll be making on the other areas.
The cuts were too steep for another U.S. Commissioner, Philip Lestenkoff, who opposed the staff numbers. Lestenkoff wanted to stick with the model the commission has used for the past several years, one that would have meant a smaller reduction of 9% coastwide.
Many in the halibut industry are advocating for more review before we implement new models.
But the other five commissioners voted to go with staff recommendations for this year in all areas except 2B, which is British Columbia, where they approved a total allowable catch or TAC of just over 7 million pounds. That's a cut of about 8% from last year, instead of the 13% cut proposed by staff. The Canadian delegation's Michael Pearson reemphasized the need for caution in the face of overall stock declines and past overestimates, but he also pointed to uncertainties in the science as well as improved catches in British Columbia.
It's not just based on the question of scientific uncertainty or relation to the change in the model. It's also in relation to our view about the actual situation of fishing in Area 2B. Which, as everyone knows, is even with the stable tax of the last few years, has seen the WPUE go up.
WPUE stands for weight per unit effort, and Southeast Alaska, or Area 2C, has seen those improvements as well. That's one reason for the slightly increased catch recommendation for the region of just over 2.6 million pounds this year. Julianne Curry represents commercial fishermen as executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association and attended the IPHC meeting.
Well, it's pretty hard for people to understand why any area would be getting an increase with the abundance declines of exploitable biomass in Alaska. However, Southeast Area 2C was the only area that saw an increase not just in commercial weight per unit of effort, but also in the survey weight per unit of effort. None of the other areas saw an increase in both of those indices.
Southeast Alaska and the Pacific Northwest, which is Area 2A, are the only areas that will see an increase under the commission limits for 2012. The Northwest quota will go up about 9%, while Southeast will see an increase of about 13%. Southeast commercial fishermen have weathered the biggest cuts to their individual catches in recent years, so Curry thinks the relatively small increase will make a difference this year.
Southeast Alaska Area 2C has seen a 76% decline in quota over the last few years, and the charter fleet has seen severe reductions in their regulations. So getting a little bump is definitely going to be helpful, but we need to keep paying attention to what's going on with the biomass and get a handle with what's happening with the stocks.
For the charter sector, the commission also approved a proposal that will somewhat ease the maximum size restriction that was imposed on the Southeast charter fleet last year. That change will allow clients to keep one fish up to 45 inches or a so-called trophy fish over 68 inches. They had been restricted to 37 inches maximum. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council endorsed the change earlier, and Southeast Alaska Guides Organization Executive Director Heath Hilliard was glad to see the commission approve it. He says the success of the charter industry is dependent largely on angler interest.
And one of the things that drives angler interest is the opportunity to catch trophy fish. And when you talk about any maximum size limit, even if it's a fairly large size limit, there still is that limit with regard to the opportunity for that fish of a lifetime. So in dealing with the operators throughout Southeast, one of the things that became abundantly clear is we needed to do something that at least for marketing purposes allowed operators to offer potential clients that trophy fish.
As far as the rest of Alaska, the biggest segment of the commercial quota is caught in Area 3A, the Central Gulf, and that will see another 17% cut this year under the IPHC limits. That comes on top of several previous years of reductions. The Western Gulf, Area 3B, will drop by 32%. The Aleutians, Area 4A and 4B, drop by about 35% and 14%, respectively. The Bering Sea catch will be cut by about 34%. The Halibut Commission also approved a commercial season start date of March 17th and an end date of November 7th in Alaska. The catch limits and other commission decisions still need approval by the federal administrations in the U.S. and Canada before they're final. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Dale Williams will serve as vice chairman of the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. The tribe selected its new officers at a meeting last week. He's joined by Stephanie Edenshaw, who will serve as treasurer, and Rachel Moreno, the secretary. The job of chairman, held by Woody Widmark, is an elected position. Widmark has a year left in his three-year term. The tribal council also approved a contract for its new general manager, Ted Wright. The tribe did not release details of the agreement, but said it was based on the council's satisfaction with his performance as interim general manager and their desire to ensure stable management for an extended period of time. Wright had previously worked as manager of the tribe in the 1990s. He returned as interim general manager in September, and the job was made permanent last week. The tribal council will be in a training session this week, so their meeting for February 1st has been canceled. Education funding and sending a message to Washington are among the issues lawmakers are expected to address this week in Juneau. Work is also expected to continue on the budget, and Senate Resources is holding hearings related to Alaska's oil production tax. The committee's expected to release an oil tax bill soon. A bill that would increase educational funding is expected to advance from the Senate Education Committee. Governor Sean Parnell said he's open to discussing ways to help districts meet fixed costs, but has problems with increases in formula programs, including raising the base student allocation. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for snow likely in the morning, then rain in the afternoon. Little or no snow accumulation. Highs around 39. Light winds becoming southeast 10 to 20 miles per hour this afternoon. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.